Can you all hear me, or are you just laughing at the way I look?
Okay. So, Lolita has fallen asleep. Humbert hopes. And he's now turned the key in the lock and enters the hotel room. The door of the lighted bathroom stood ajar. In addition to that, a skeleton glow came through the Venetian blind from the outside arc lights. These intercrossed rays penetrated the darkness of the bedroom and revealed the following situation. Clothed in one of her old nightgowns, my Lolita lay on her side with her back to me in the middle of the bed. Her lightly veiled body and bare limbs formed a Z. She'd put both pillows under her dark, tousled head. A band of pale light crossed her top vertebrae. I had already placed my knee on the edge of the bed when Lolita turned her head and stared at me through the striped shadows. Now, this was something the intruder had not expected. The whole pill spiel had for object a fastness of sleep that a whole regiment would not have disturbed. And here she was, staring at me and thickly calling me Barbara. Barbara, wearing my pajamas, which were much too tight for her, remained poised motionless over the little sleep talker. Softly, with a hopeless sigh, Dolly turned away, resumed her initial position. For at least 2 minutes, I waited and strained on the brink. Finally, I heaved myself onto my narrow margin of bed, stealthily pulled at the odds and ends of sheets piled up to the south of my stone-cold heels, and Lolita lifted her head and gaped at me. As I learned later from a helpful pharmaceutist, the purple pills do not even belong to that big and noble family of barbiturates. And though it might have induced sleep in a neurotic who believed it to be a potent drug, it was too mild a sedative to affect for any length of time a wary, albeit weary, nymphet. When Lolita opened her eyes again, I realized that whether or not the drug might work later in the evening, the security I had relied on was a sham one. Slowly, her head turned away and dropped onto her unfair amount of pillow. I lay quite still on my brink, peering at her rumpled hair, at the glimmer of nymphet flesh, where half a haunch and half a shoulder dimly showed, trying to gauge the depth of her sleep by the rate of her respiration. Some time passed, nothing changed, and I decided I might risk getting a little closer to that lovely and maddening glimmer. But hardly had I moved into its warm purlieu than her breath was suspended, and I had the odious feeling that little Dolores was wide awake and would explode in screams if I touched her with any part of my wretchedness. Please, reader, no matter your exasperation with the tender-hearted, morbidly sensitive, infinitely circumspect hero of my book, do not skip these essential pages. Imagine me. I shall not exist if you do not imagine me. Try to discern the doe in me, trembling in the forest of my own iniquity. Let's even smile a little. After all, there's no harm in smiling. For instance, I almost wrote, for instance, I had no place to rest my head and a fit of heartburn, they call those fries French grand dieu, was added to my discomfort. And less than 6 inches from me and my burning life was nebulous Lolita. After a long, stirless vigil, my tentacles moved toward her again, and this time the creak of the mattress did not awake her. I managed to bring my ravenous bulk so close to her that I felt the aura of her bare shoulder like a warm breath upon my cheek. And then she sat up, gasped, muttered with insane rapidity something about boats, tugged at the sheets, and lapsed back into her dark, rich, young unconsciousness. As she tossed within that abundant flow of sleep, recently auburn, at present lunar, her arm struck me across the face. For a second, I held her. She freed herself from the shadow of my embrace, doing this not consciously, not violently, not with any personal distaste, but with the neutral, plaintive murmur of a child demanding its natural rest. And again, the situation remained the same. Lolita, with her curved spine to Humbert, Humbert resting his head on his hand and burning with desire and dyspepsia. The latter necessitated a trip to the bathroom for a draught of water, which is the best medicine I know in my case, except perhaps milk with radishes. And when I re-entered the strange, pale-striped fastness, where Lolita's old and new clothes relined in various attitudes of enchantment on pieces of furniture that seemed vaguely afloat, my impossible daughter sat up and in clear tones demanded a drink too. She took the resilient, cold paper cup in her shadowy hand and gulped down its contents gratefully, her long eyelashes pointing cupward. And then, with an infantile gesture that carried more charm than any carnal caress, little Lolita wiped her lips against my shoulder. She fell back on the pillow and was instantly asleep again. I started to move toward her, ready for any disappointment, knowing I had better wait, but incapable of waiting. My pillow smelled of her hair. I moved toward my glimmering darling, stopping or retreating every time I thought she stirred or was about to stir. Mists of tenderness enfolded mountains of longing. Now and then it seemed to me that the enchanted prey was about to meet halfway the enchanted hunter, that her haunch was working its way toward me under the soft sand of a remote and fabulous beach, and then her dimpled dimness would stir and I would know she was farther away from me than ever. If I dwell at some length on the tremors and gropings of that distant night, it is because I insist upon proving that I am not, and never was, and never could have been, a brutal scoundrel. The gentle and dreamy regions through which I crept were the patrimonies of poets, not crime's prowling ground. Had I reached my goal, my ecstasy would have been all softness, a case of internal combustion, of which she would hardly have felt the heat, even if she were wide awake. But I still hoped she might be gradually engulfed in a completeness of stupor that would allow me to taste more than a glimmer of her. And so I lay in wait. Frigid gentlewomen of the jury, I had thought that months, perhaps years, would elapse before I dared to reveal myself to Dolores Hayes. But by 6, she was awake, and by 6:15, we were technically lovers. I'm going to tell you something very strange. It was she who seduced me. Upon hearing her first morning yawn, I feigned handsome, profiled sleep. I just did not know what to do. Would she be shocked at finding me by her side and not in some spare bed? Would she collect her clothes and lock herself in the bathroom? But Milo was a sportive lassie. I felt her eyes on me, and when she uttered at last that beloved chortling note of hers, I knew her eyes had been laughing. She rolled over to my side, and her warm brown hair came against my collarbone. I gave a mediocre imitation of waking up. We lay quietly, I gently caressed her hair, and we gently kissed. Her kiss, to my delirious embarrassment, had some rather comical refinements of flutter and probe, which made me conclude that she'd been coached at an early age by some little lesbian. No Charlie boy could have taught her that. As if to see whether I had my fill and learned the lesson, she drew away and surveyed me. Her cheekbones were flushed, her full underlip glistened. My dissolution was near. All at once, with a burst of rough glee, the sign of the nymphet, she put her mouth to my ear, but for quite a while my mind could not separate into words the hot thunder of her whisper. And she laughed and brushed the hair off her face and tried again, and gradually the odd sense of living in a brand new mad new dream world where everything was permissible came over me as I realized what she was suggesting. I answered I did not know what game she and Charlie had played. You mean you never, her features twisted into a stare of disgusted incredulity. You mean, she persisted, now kneeling above me, you mean you never did it when you were a kid? Never, I answered truthfully. Okay, said Lolita, here is where we start. However, I shall not bore my learned readers with a detailed account of Lolita's presumption. Suffice it to say that not a trace of modesty did I perceive in this beautiful, hardly formed young girl whom modern coeducation, juvenile mores, the campfire racket, and so forth had utterly and hopelessly depraved. She saw the stark act is merely part of a youngster's furtive world, unknown to adults. What adults did for purposes of procreation was no business of hers. My life was handled by little Lolita in an energetic, matter-of-fact manner as if it were some insensate gadget unconnected with me. In my strange predicament, I feigned supreme stupidity and let her have her way, at least while I could still bear it. But really, these are irrelevant matters. I'm not concerned with so-called sex at all. Anybody can imagine those elements of animality. A greater endeavor lures me on, to fix once for all the perilous magic of nymphets. I have to tread carefully. I have to speak in a whisper. Oh, you veteran crime reporter, you grave old usher, you once popular policeman now in solitary confinement after gracing that school crossing for years, you wretched emeritus read to by a boy. It would never do, would it, to have you fellows fall madly in love with my Lolita. Had I been a painter, had the management of the Enchanted Hunters lost its mind one summer day and commissioned me to redecorate their dining room with murals of my own making, this is what I might have thought up. Let me list some fragments. There would have been a lake. There would have been an arbor in flame flower. There would have been a sultan, his face expressing great agony, belied, as it were, by his molding caress, helping a Calipygian slave child to climb a column of onyx. There would have been those luminous globules of gonadal glow that travel up the opalescent sides of jukeboxes. There would have been all kinds of camp activities, too, canoeing, combing curls in the lakeside sun. There would have been poplars, apples, a suburban Sunday. There would have been a fire opal dissolving within a ripple-ringed pool, a last throb, a last dab of color, stinging red, smarting pink, a sigh, a wincing child. I'm trying to describe these things, not to relive them in my present boundless misery, but to sort out the portion of hell and the portion of heaven in that strange, awful, maddening world, nymphet love. The beastly and the beautiful merged at one point, and it is that borderline I would like to fix, and I feel I fail to do so utterly. Why? The stipulation of the Roman law, according to which a girl may marry at 12, was adopted by the church and is still preserved rather tacitly in some of the United States, and 15 is lawful everywhere. There is nothing wrong, say both hemispheres, when a brute of 40, blessed by the local priest and bloated with drink, sheds his sweat-drenched finery and thrusts himself up to the hilt into his youthful bride. In such stimulating temperate climates, says an old magazine in this prison library, as St. Louis, Chicago, and Cincinnati, girls mature at the end of their 12th year. Dolores Hayes was born less than 300 miles from stimulating Cincinnati. I have but followed nature. I am nature's faithful hound. Why then this horror that I cannot shake off? Did I deprive her of her flower? Sensitive gentlewomen of the jury, I was not even her first lover.